It's worth the trip out here just to be introduced by Brother Dud. I really appreciate what he had to say. Wish I were more worthy, and please don't say amen to that, Dud. I have always counted it a deep joy to come and be a part of this lectureship. I remember the initial one in 1982, and it started on a high note, and it's just continued to get higher and higher and better with the passing of each year. In fact, I feel toward this lectureship kind of like the little boy that had asked for his third helping of his favorite dessert, chocolate pudding. And as he began to eat the third helping, he said, "Mommy, it just gets gooder and gooder and gooder." And I believe that's the way of this lectureship. It just continues to get better and better and better. I'm glad that we're making a study of the book of John. He's one of the most lovable personalities in the entirety of the New Testament. There must have been something outstanding about his character that enabled the Lord to look upon him with affection. In fact, one of the favorite designations that he makes of himself is either that disciple or the disciple whom Jesus loved. And he gives us a great and good picture of the Son of God. He wrote 5 books of the New Testament and even 50 of its 260 chapters. And we've been privileged and will be privileged to study 21 of those great chapters in this lectureship. Our lesson today deals with monogenes, and this is a very controversial topic or expression, but that ought not to come as a surprise or a shock to any of us, because it comes from the Bible, and the Bible itself is controversial. Many people believing that it's just human in derivation, others of us willing to contend that it is divine in origin. Both testaments of the Bible are controversial, whether we're under both of them, one of them, or neither one of them. And entire books of the Bible are controversial. This would be true of books in the Old Testament, Genesis, Daniel, Jonah, for a few examples, and books that are controversial in the New Testament, the book of Romans, and the book of Hebrews, and especially the book of Revelation. Entire chapters of the Bible are controversial. That's true with the first 11 chapters in Genesis. It's true with many of the prophetic chapters in the Old Testament, especially those that point to the coming of the Christ child. And it is true of many chapters in the New Testament. Think about all of the misapprehensions and misunderstandings that center around Matthew 24 and Matthew 25 or Revelation 20. And so the entire Bible is filled with that which is controversial. And of course there are verses that are controversial. Acts 2:38 appears to me to be very, very clear, crystal clear, and yet think about the great battles that have raged about just one word in that passage. What is intended by for or unto, derived from the little Greek word eis. And so entire verses of the Bible are controversial. And the topic that we discuss this afternoon is controversial also. But that ought not to make us shy away from a close consideration of it. Only begotten comes from monogenes. It has 4 syllables. It's a compound term of mono or monos, and then the genes part. And the mono part has reference to one or only. And this is about as far as many people are willing to go with it. They're not willing to give any kind of emphasis to the genes part. And whatever genes means, it must mean something. Else John would not have added it to the word mono. If he had just simply referred to Jesus as the mono or the monos Son of God, one or one and only would have done justice to that. But that's not the expression that he used. He uses the expression monogenes. I remember being in the office of Brother Guy N. Woods in the early part of the 80s as he had begun his great commentary on the book of John. And many of us have cut our teeth on that in the years that it has been out. I think the finest work ever produced by any of our brethren is a commentary on the book of John. But he had just begun his writing of that commentary, and he dealt with the word monogenes in the first chapter. And he handed the notes over to me and let me read it. And I said upon concluding, "Brother Woods, what you have written about monogenes even if there were nothing else in this commentary, would be far more than the price that will be asked for it. But I was thrilled when I read his wonderful comments. And of course, he's been under the impression, or was under the impression all of his life, that monogenes needs to be translated as only begotten. In fact, I've included a wonderful quotation from him in the manuscript in the book, in which he calls attention to the fact that the modern-day versions have attacked monogenes and claiming that it doesn't have any kind of begetting within it. He refers especially to a commentator by the name of Leon Morris, and I think Morris comes from the Southern Baptist background. But Morris is on record as saying that there isn't any begettal that is involved in this word. And Brother Woods takes him to task and shows by the etymology of the word that there is a begetting, and that only begotten is the proper expression or the proper rendering of this wonderful term. I'm glad that Brother Paul led us in our prayer today. I had the highest of love and admiration and affection for his late and lovely father. Brother Noel and I fought a number of battles together on this word, only begotten, or monogenes. We had a television program that both of us appeared on about 20 years ago, in which we were asked to speak for 2 sessions just on the word only begotten. And I've also included a quotation from the book, in the book, about how he traces the etymology of the word. And he came to the same conclusion that Brother Woods did, that the proper rendering of monogenes is only begotten. And I believe that's the truth about the matter. I've never had any question marks other than that. I have read what many, many, many people have said in opposition to this. I've never read anything from any of them, brethren on the inside or people on the outside, that I thought had any degree of merit whatsoever. That's how strongly I am of the conviction that monogenes ought to be translated as only begotten. I believe that I'm within the realm of accuracy when I say that throughout this century, and we're nearly at the end of it, there has been a century of conspiracy in regard to monogenes. There was a translation that came out in 1898, and they entitled it the New Testament for the 20th Century, but that translation tampered with the word only begotten. And when Weymouth came along early in this century, he tampered with monogenes. And Moffat did the same in 1922. And Goodspeed did the same in 1923. And a man by the name of Torrey, another translator, did the same in 1933. A man by the name of Charles Williams, and he taught in a Baptist college not too far from where I live in Jackson, Tennessee, Union College, now Union University, and he tampered with that expression. He, of course, was from a Baptist background, as that school is a Baptist school. And then when the Revised Standard Version came out just in the New Testament, they didn't put out both Testaments together, but they put out the New Testament in 1946. Now remember, the RSV was put out by modernists and put out for modernists, and it was put out for the avowed intent to help in the progress of modernistic thinking. And when the RSV translators came out with this in 1946, they just simply dealt with it as only son. But I'm quick to say that Jesus Christ is not the only Son of God. You and I are sons of God. Of course, that's used generically, not to refer just to the male part of the kingdom. But anybody who has obeyed the gospel, man, woman, or accountable child, is a son of God. The Apostle John said, "Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God." 1 John 3, verses 1 and 2. The same writer that uses the word monogenes a number of times in his writings. And I'll refer to these passages just a little bit later on. But we find that the Revised Standard, when it came out in 1952 with both Testaments, they didn't make any changes with only son. and the ones that have come out in the last half of this century. For instance, just a few of them would be the New English Bible, 1960, 1961. They tampered with this word. And Brecher, when he came out with Good News for Modern Man, 1966, he tampered with this word. And of course, the New International Version, when it came out in the 1970s, it also tampered with this word. They decided to use one and only, but that still didn't solve the problem. You still have the expression dealing with just the first part of the word and not with the latter part of the word. And so the translations that have come out for the most part during this century have been in favor of only Son or one and only Son. Now would be a good time maybe to set before you the five times that John uses this expression. He uses it in three of the chapters that he wrote, twice in John 1, twice in John 3, and then once in his first epistle, chapter 4. But in John 1 and verse 14, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And then, no man has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, He hath declared Him. John 1, 14 and 18. And then what many of us have referred to as the golden text of the Bible, I guess if I have one verse out of the entirety of the New Testament, or even of the Bible itself, that I would consider my all-time favorite, it would be John 3 and verse 16. I enjoy preaching about it. I enjoy studying about that wonderful text. For God so loved the world, that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And then in John 3 and verse 18, he that believeth on Him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And then in 1 John 4 and verse 9, we see John's expression, and this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent His only begotten Son into the world that we might live through Him. I've quoted from the King James Version and the American Standard renders monogenes the same way. And so we have from our two reliable translations throughout the years, Brother Dove has suggested that we make any of our quotations from either the King James or the American Standard. But both of these, one of them coming out in 1611 and the other one in 1909, both of them went on record as saying that only begotten is the proper way to discuss or to translate monogenes. Well, not only have we had a good many people on the outside who have mistranslated this term, we've also had a number of people on the inside who are just as adamant against only begotten as any of the RSV translators ever dared to be, or any of the NIV translators ever dared to be. I don't know why they've declared war on this memorable, this precious, this magnanimous word, but that is exactly what they have done. I want to say some things about Brother Hugo McCord. And Brother McCord and I have been friends for a number of years, but he and I do not see the same. We're not on the same wavelength at all when it comes to dealing with monogenates. Back in the 1980s, about 1984-85, when he began work on what later would be known as McCord's translation, he asked me to be one of his consultants, and already had a workload that was entirely too much, but I said, I'll do what I can. And so as he would finish one book, he would send it to me. And in painstaking fashion, I would go through it. I offered a number of suggestions, some of which he accepted, others which he rejected. But I noted that as he sent the books to me, he was waiting until near the last to deal with the books written by John. And I felt like I knew what he would do with monogenes. So I wrote him from the heart, a heartfelt letter. And I said, Brother McCord, when you get to John 1 and John 3 and 1 John 4, please don't sell us out as the RSV translators did, as the NIV translators have done, and a multitude of other translations have done. Well, he said, let's talk about this. And so for a number of weeks, we corresponded. And on one occasion, we had a face-to-face discussion about it in my own home. But he said basically to me, you marshal all the evidence that you can for only begotten as the accurate rendering, and then I'll send you my arguments. Well, he began to send me his arguments, and I recognized almost immediately that it was basically the same information that R.L. Roberts had sent me many years before, 1970-1971, when he and I had a long series of letters passing back and forth about how only begotten ought to be translated. R.L., brother to J.W., and both of these brothers were long connected with ACU and Abilene. R.L. was under the firm conviction that it ought not to be only begotten. And I thought every argument that he sent me was just as threadbare as it could be. And I told Brother McCord when he began to send me the same information, I said, Brother McCord, it doesn't look any better now in 1985 and 6 and 7 as it did when I was corresponding with R.L. Roberts. Of course, R.L. had been greatly influenced by his own brother, J.W. But he persisted in his own decision as to how he was going to translate it. And when his version came out, he opted for unique. And then I think in the second edition, he decided to change the unique to beloved. And I thought, well, you really don't know how it ought to be translated. You're just sure how it ought not to be translated. And Brother McCord had grown up under preaching of the greats of his early day that preached Jesus Christ as God's only begotten Son, just as I did. He's a little bit older than I am, but we grew up on the same kind of basic gospel preaching. And I had researched his writings enough to know that he had used this expression in earlier years as far as his own preaching and teaching were concerned. But in 1988, as Brother Dub referred to a moment ago, Brother Noel Meredith and I met Brother Ralph Gilmore and Brother Hugh McCord in a discussion at Fried Hardeman. And for an entire day, morning sessions and afternoon sessions, we dealt with how only begotten ought to be, or monogenes ought to be translated. And we also talked a great extent about how whether the word church belongs in the New Testament, because Brother McCord did not allow church to appear in his translation. When he came out with the first edition, he allowed church to occur one time in 1 Corinthians 16. And I wrote and said, I didn't think you were going to allow it in as much as once. He said that was an oversight, and it'll be taken out when the next edition comes out. Well, I never did understand why he attacked the church as a proper rendering for ecclesia as he did. I've heard him lecture a number of times since his translation comes out or came out, and he still refers to the church as the church. If I were under the conviction that it doesn't belong in the New Testament and that it's not an accurate translation, I think I would dismiss it from my preaching vocabulary. But Brother McCord has persisted in staying with only or with unique or with beloved as a proper rendering for only begotten or monogenes. And I want to say something now as to where I believe some of this influence is coming from. I believe some of it can be attributed to a Baptist writer, a liberal Baptist writer, by the name of Dale Moody. Now, nearly 50 years ago, in the early part of the 1950s, Dale Moody wrote a 17-page article that appeared in the Journal of Biblical Literature, often called JBL, in which he tried to defend only as the proper rendering for monogenes. And I went to one of the libraries in our area and checked out that volume of JBL, and I read his arguments and tried to read them carefully. I was surprised because he acclaimed himself to be a rather fine Bible scholar of the Greek language. I thought that he made an egregious Greek blunder in one of the statements that he made. And sure enough, I've noticed that same blunder being parroted by some of our members. But I think it's interesting that at the very time that he wrote this article against Only Begotten, that serving on the editorial commission or editorial committee of JBL were some of the RSV translators, such as Miller Burris and Henry Cadbury, and then Harry M. Orlinsky. Orlinsky is quite a case in and of himself, because he had to translate the Old Testament for the RSV, and I have him on tape as saying the New Testament doesn't even belong in the Bible. He rejects Christ. He rejects the virgin birth. He rejects the divinity of Christ, the divine derivation of the Christian religion. He gave some lessons out on the West Coast about 22 years ago, the latter part of the 1970s. A close friend of mine, Brother Archie Looper, went and heard him and taped him, and then he sent me copies of Orlinsky's tapes. And in that message, he was asked the question during a question and answer period in regard to what is the Bible. And he said it's the Holy Bible of the Old Testament, namely Genesis through Malachi. He doesn't even believe the New Testament belongs. And yet they invited him to have a part in putting out the RSV. But I think there's a close connection between where Moody wrote this article and the men that were guiding that particular volume of studies at that time and how the RSV dealt with Only Begotten. I believe a great deal of our trouble along this line has come from modernistic sources and not from the actual teaching of the New Testament itself. I'll give us something about the conspiracy that has been part and parcel of this entire century. And now I want to give what I believe to be an airtight case for Only Begotten as the accurate rendering of monogenes. And there isn't a finer place with which to begin than John himself. And he should have known exactly what was intended by Only Begotten, because he uses that term monogenes not one time, not twice, not three times, not four times, but a total of five times in his writings. I quoted them a few moments ago. He looked upon Jesus Christ as being that marvelous and that magnificent monogenes. And of course, it's been accurately translated from the Greek tongue into our own English language as Only Begotten. There isn't a finer person with which to begin than John the Apostle himself. But the early church fathers, sometimes called the patristic fathers, and these are the men who were in leadership shortly after the apostolic age ended. And it's amazing to go through the writings of these men and see how often they referred to themselves or to Jesus as the only begotten Son of God or the only begotten of the Father. Now, Brother McCord and Moody and some of these other fellows, Roberts did this with me about 30 years ago, they claimed that nobody ever heard of only begotten until Jerome came along. And they claimed that he coined it. Now, remember, Jerome was not born until 340 A.D., A.D. 340. So that's a good long time after the early church fathers began to write. Brother Wood said that the earliest church fathers, these that were closest to the apostolic age, that they surely were in position to know the significance of only begotten. And in contrast to that, Brother McCord said there were hundreds of thousands of early Christians who never did hear of Jesus Christ as God's only begotten Son. They knew him to be the Son of God, but not the only begotten Son of God. Well, it is strange, exceedingly strange to me, that if Jerome, the Vulgate translator, is the one that invented the term, the one that coined the term, and these And these among us and outside us refer to this as Jerome's jumble. And it's interesting to me and rather amazing how Jerome didn't coin it or did coin it, and yet it was used a long, long time before his birth. Irenaeus lived close to the apostolic age. In fact, he was a close associate of Polycarp. And Polycarp, of course, was a close associate of John the Apostle. And Irenaeus went on record as suggesting that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. Justin Martyr lived a long, long time before the birth of Jerome. And he referred to Jesus Christ as being God's only begotten Son. A man by the name of Gregory Thaumaturgus, and I'm not sure I have the correct pronunciation of that name, but he lived in the 3rd century, which would be the 200s, and he referred to Jesus as being the only begotten of the Father. And when I was getting ready for the discussion with Brother McCord and Brother Gilmore, I made some trips, mostly at my own expense, to some of the most prestigious religious university libraries that we have in some 2 or 3 different states. And I especially was interested in going through the Anastasian Fathers and the Nicene Fathers, because all of these lived and wrote before Jerome was even born. And it's amazing the number of these men who referred to Jesus Christ as being God's only begotten Son. And yet somehow Jerome is supposed to have concocted it, supposed to have coined it, supposed to have invented it. I have put this in the manuscript of the book, that if Jerome could come back and review all that has been said about his so-called jumble, he might want to give some lectures about Moody's jumble, or McCord's jumble, or Robert's jumble, or some of these others that have credited him with something that he didn't invent at all. I readily grant that he used the term, and he used it a number of times, but he didn't coin it. And he used it, no doubt getting it from the same source as the earlier church fathers had done, namely from John the Apostle in the New Testament. I believe they have a lot to say. Those who lived before 325, those who lived about 325, and those who lived shortly after 325. Because we're talking about men who lived and wrote before Jerome was old enough to read and old enough to write anything. And certainly old enough to put out the Vulgate translation. But not only do we have the airtight case from the early church fathers, but also the Reformation leaders. I also researched a number of these men, men who lived in the 1500s and the 1600s. And Luther didn't have any aversion to referring to him as the only begotten Son. This he did. And Calvin, though I strongly disagree with the 5 basic points of Calvinism, I think they've been a curse to the religious world. Calvin was right on target as referring to Christ as being the only begotten Son of God. And then men who have given their lives to the study of the Greek language have come forth with the same type of testimony, that only begotten is a proper rendering for only, or for the word monogenes. For instance, Vincent has a series of volumes on Greek studies, and I've had his set of studies for a long, long time, and he's on record as favoring only begotten. I don't guess any man in modern times has done any more writing on the Greek language and words in particular than A.T. Robertson of the Baptist Church. And Robertson also has a set of works on word studies, and he's under the same conviction as these others, that Jesus Christ really and truly was the only begotten Son of God. There's a man who has been the editor of Pulpit Heps for a number of years, and he came out with a book maybe 15 or 20 years ago dealing with whether Christ is God or not. And I thought it would be good to purchase that book and read it before Brother Meredith and I had the discussion with Brother McCord and Brother Gilmore. And I obtained the book and I read it, And, of course, this man is a Greek in background. He hails from the island of Cyprus. I think I'm correct in that. And so he grew up speaking the Grecian language. And in that book, as Christ God, he comes forth many, many times referring to Christ as being the only begotten Son of God. And then there is a man by the name of Machopolis, who's connected with one of the Greek Orthodox universities. And he also grew up with a Greek-speaking background. And he is on record as suggesting that unique is not a proper translation of monogenes, that it needs to be only begotten. Now, these are men who have lived with the Greek language and written about it practically all the days of their adult lives. But there have been a number of lexicons who have favored this same position. One of the very first lexicons that I ever purchased or ever added to my library favors only begotten as the proper rendering. And Abbott and Smith, and then Liddell and Scott, and then outstanding names such as Parkhurst and Doms and others, they are on record as suggesting that only begotten is the proper rendering for only, or for the word monogenes. And then H.A.W. Meyer. Some of you may have Meyer's works in your library. Brother Woods paid this outstanding respect to H.A.W. Meyer. He said, in all probability, he's the finest exegete of the Greek language that we have had in modern times. And Meyer is on record as saying that only begotten is a proper translation of monogenes. Outstanding commentators have also fallen right in with this proper and accurate rendering. For instance, Adam Clark and Matthew Henry, and they are no doubt commentators that most of us have their works in their library. And even though they have some things with which I would disagree, they nevertheless looked upon Jesus and referred to him as God's only begotten Son. And another commentary refers, Jameson and Fawcett, and I forget the third one. But anyway, Brown. All right. They have come forth with the same rendering in their work as only begotten a proper rendering for monogenes. And then outstanding preachers in the Protestant world have also suggested that Jesus Christ is the only begotten Son of God. I did work over a number of weeks before we had the discussion with Brother McCord in researching the writings of many of our own brethren. And, of course, Campbell translated it and had it translated in Living Oracles as the only begotten. In fact, Living Oracles that came out in the 1820s, and this was not really Campbell's translation. He had used the works of three men, James McKnight being one of them, and a couple of more men. And he put in only begotten into the translation of Living Oracles. And McKnight has a very interesting expression, and I don't believe James McKnight has to take a back seat to any of these that are on the other side of the issue. But he thinks that there is actually a begetting that is involved, that it actually heightens and elevates our concept of the Son of God, and he's on record as saying only begotten is a proper rendering. Now, his comments stand in strong contrast with Brother McCord, who says that only begotten is belittling, and it is demeaning, and it makes a Jehovah's Witness creature out of Jesus Christ. And during the discussion that we had at Henderson, each of the four of us spoke, and then we had an open forum for people in the audience. Brother Garland Elkins asked what I thought was one of the most crucial questions of the entire day. And in regard to that question that Brother Elkins asked Brother McCord, he said, only begotten is, quote, false on the very face of it. Well, these great men, both in the church and out of the church to which I've alluded, they did not believe that it was false on the face of it. They did not believe that it was belittling to the Son of God. They did not believe that it was demeaning to Him. They did not believe that it took anything away from His divine nature at all. I was on a lectureship at Sunny Slope, which is in Paducah, Kentucky. Had the privilege of being on every one of their lectures for about the last 20 years. But about the time Brother McCord and I were having our discussion, I was on the program that year with men like Dub McClish and Alan Hires and Garland Elkins and Noah Meredith. He did the open forum as director that year. And Curtis Cates. And I turned in a question and asked each one of these men to respond to it as to whether only begotten is the proper rendering of the term. And without any exception, every single one of them answered that it was the proper rendering. Most of them called attention to the fact that modernism has done damage to this term. And a part of that discussion I found to be very interesting. Brother Curtis Cates said this. He said, some years back when I was doing a paper for Furman Curley, I asked Brother W.B. West, and of course the paper was on John 3:16, by the way. Brother Curtis said, I asked Brother W.B. West how monogenes ought to be translated. Brother Curtis said, we'll only do it. And Brother West said, no. And then Brother Curtis said, how about unique? Will that do it? And Brother West said, that's entirely too broad. And then Brother Curtis said, how ought it to be translated? And Brother W.B. West said, only begotten. Before we had the discussion at Henderson, I sent out a questionnaire to about 100 of our preachers and professors, and I had just one or two places for them to check, and I enclosed a stamped, a self-addressed letter back to me. All they had to do was read and mark one or two places, and about half of the ones that I sent to it would not even respond. Some who had preached for 40, 50, or 60 years said, I don't know how the term ought to be translated. But you know, one of the very best answers that I got back from any of these really surprised me. I sent one to Harold Hayslip, who at the time was president of Lipscomb. And Harold and I have seldom ever been on the same wavelength. But he answered the question as well as anybody did. He suggested that only begotten is the preferred translation for monogenes. And I thought that to be rather interesting indeed. Is this the way to properly translate it? I believe firmly and fully and forcefully that it is.